Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, a show where I invite questions on practical spirituality from you listeners, and together we look for the answers in Swami's message. Our questions, problems and issues should be made a reason to dwell deep into Swami's message, for it is there that we find solutions and much more. So let us begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and I'm here to host for you this week's episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. Well, it's a beautiful day here in Parthi, like how every day is. No surprise there. But if I were to think for a moment, why is Parthi special, or what makes Prashanthi Nilayam so enchanting? Is it the landscape? Is it the gardens, the clean township? Well, certainly not the weather, some of you might say. It's a no-brainer because we feel this is my Swami's abode. Back in the 1940s and even till the 70s, this place had little else to boast about. It took enormous effort to come here and even more difficult to stay here with all the inconveniences. Yes, Puttaparthi and Prashanthi Nilayam still were special for Swami's devotees. Why? Because it was their Lord's abode. Late Mrs. Ratanlal was telling us about her first trip to Parthi in the 60s. That time they lived in a city with a huge luxurious house and over 10 helpers and cooks. When she came to Parthi, they had to share a room with so many others, cook and wash dishes themselves, sleep in the open and bathe in shared facilities, all of which she would have never done otherwise. But at the end of that entire description of all the hardships they had to face, with tears in her eyes, she said, "But those 10 days were the most blissful days of my life." How is that possible? Just the feeling that I am in the abode of my Lord. Now consider this. Swami says that His true abode is our heart. "I am your Hridayavasi," He reminds us. If we can truly believe that, will it ever matter to us where we are, how we are, in luxury or penury, comfort or discomfort? Won't we be ever happy and joyous? With prayers to Swami that we can recognize that Prashanthi Nilayam in our own hearts, let's begin this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. As always, let us begin with an interesting quote that we always do. And this quote is from a person whose book used to be very popular in the hostel when I was a student. The book is Living with the Himalayan Masters and the author is Swami Rama. So here is the quote of this week from Swami Rama. I quote, "What good does it do to have all riches of the world and all the world's pleasures? They will all disappear in a flash we call a human lifetime. Focusing on the pleasures of the world keeps the mind too distracted to search for the inner self." End of quote. Imagine, dear listeners, you walk into a supermarket with a pocket full of money and there is a huge counter there with a number of things on sale and it's an awesome deal, let's say. But there is only one condition. Whatever you buy from that counter, you cannot take it outside the supermarket. You have to use it only within the store. The clothes you can buy there, the foodstuff and everything, it has to be used within the supermarket. But let's say there's another section where things are at their actual cost, so no discounts, you can buy only less for the money that you have. But these things you can carry with you when you leave the supermarket. Tell me, how much time will you spend in the shopping market just to enjoy what is on sale? At some time you have to leave the mall, isn't it? What is the point in filling your shopping cart with all kinds of stuff which you will never be able to take out of the place? Same is the case with our life too. The money in the pocket is like the time we have at our disposal. All through life we spend it on pleasures and riches and vain glory. None of it, believe me, none of it we can take out of this life. Just because it's tempting and comes at a cheap price, we fill our shopping cart with it. Doesn't it make sense to pick those things that we can carry out with us, even if it calls for more effort? Because that is the reality. Life is really, really short. 100 years, 70 years, 80 years, it's not even a blip in eternity, or even the life of the planet Earth for that matter. But in this extremely infinitesimal period of time, we can earn, if we choose, something that can be eternal. How grand an opportunity that is. But yet, we only hanker after things which cannot give us joy for more than few minutes, even within this lifetime. Can we consciously overcome this distraction and seek for the eternal? Well, I'll leave it there, and before we head to the question of the week, permit me to read that quote of Swami Rama one more time. What good does it do to have all the riches of the world and all the world's pleasures? They will all disappear in a flash that we call a human lifetime. Focusing on the pleasures of the world keeps the mind too distracted to search for the inner self. Alright then, let's head to the question of this week. The person who sent us a question this week is somebody who has sent us a question earlier too. It's Emma from New Jersey, and if you remember, she was a 12-year-old girl who sent us a beautiful question last time, and I'm sure the question that she sent us this time too is very, very profound. And as always, as before, she has sent us the question in her own sweet voice. So let's listen to the question, and then we will see what answer we can give little Emma.
Saram Prem Uncle, this is Emma. My questions are, what is the meaning of having a pure heart? How do you know that you have a pure heart? To have purity in your heart, what do we need to do? Thank you, and Saram.
Well, that's a very beautiful question, Emma, and a very profound one. Well, the way these little children are asking us questions, I think they are improving the level of the program with the questions they're asking. So thank you, Emma, for that very, very beautiful question. There are many ways of explaining what it means to have a pure heart and how do you get at having a pure heart. But I think I'll choose one of the simpler ones, but nevertheless, it is a very effective one which Swami himself has taught us, what it means when we say that we should have a pure heart. How simple it is, I'll definitely be using a few Sanskrit words which Swami usually uses, but I don't think you should worry because they're simple and some of them you would even be familiar with because of your SSC classes. So what is a pure heart? But before we even come to what is a pure heart, what do we mean by the word purity or purification? What's the difference between the terms transformation and purification? Transformation is when you change one thing to another, right? You change it completely, you transform it. But purification is when you have something and you remove from it what does not belong to it, and then it becomes pure. Let's say, for example, you have a glass of water. Remove what is not supposed to be in that glass of water, then what you actually get is water, but we call it pure water now. In fact, that water which does not have any impurities is real water, right? But when we remove the impurities, it becomes pure water. Well, same is the case with a pure heart too. When we remove the impurities that do not belong to the heart, you actually return the heart to its natural state, which we now call the pure heart. So what are those impurities? Well, Swami speaks of them as the six inner enemies, doesn't he? Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Desire, anger, greed, lust, pride, and jealousy. Nothing new in that. We always hear that from Swami, and you must have learnt it even in your SSC classes. But let's not go into these, because you ask about purity, so why dwell on impurities? So we'll concentrate on purity for today, because even by doing that, we can remove these impurities and return the heart to its pure state. So if a pure heart is a heart that is in its own natural state, as I explained to you, what is the nature of this heart? The nature of this heart is to love, as Swami would say, and to love spontaneously without any expectations or selfish motives. Not loving because I will get something in return if I love you, or not because I've already got something and I should be grateful to you and so I love you. A love which is absolutely spontaneous and very, very natural. Well, if you're not able to relate to that, it's all right. Just think of Swami. How did Swami love all of us? How did Swami interact with all of us? Well, that's the very nature of our heart too. That's really what we are. And that's why Swami always asks us to return to that state. I recall a very beautiful quote once when I read, where the author of that quote explains, you know, what do you actually need to do if you want to see? If you want to make your eyes see, what do you have to do? He said, there is nothing. You just have to remove the obstructions which lie before the eye, and then the eye sees. You don't have to make the eye see or do anything to make the eye see. And he went on to say, same is the case with the heart. When the heart is unobstructed, love happens. Because just like how seeing is natural for the eye, loving is natural for the heart. So when the heart is unobstructed by all of these inner enemies or impurities which we spoke about, then automatically love happens. So now coming to the question of how to purify this heart, because that's the most important question, right? We all want to know how to get there. Now in our minds we get all sorts of thoughts, some of them good, some bad, some very noble, some evil and mischievous too, pleasant and unpleasant, and so on. Your heart is filled with all of these things. Most of the time we have no control over them. But you can always choose which thoughts you want to dwell upon, and more importantly, which thoughts you want to act upon. If an impure thought comes and we act upon it, it is then that it will become a stain, right? There is a difference between probably a dust which is on something and a stain. A stain is more difficult to get rid of, isn't it? So when you get an impure thought and then you start acting upon it or basing your actions upon it, it will start becoming a stain and then it becomes more difficult to remove it. In the same way, when we have a good thought or we entertain good thoughts consciously and choose to act upon them, those good thoughts will start becoming a permanent fixture of our heart. So now coming back to the heart and its nature of love, let me see if I can tell you some simple ways by which we can increase this love component in the heart, thereby making it more pure. And the good news is, it is possible. We can consciously make efforts and move towards this purity. To explain how we must love different types of people we come across in life, Swami has spoken about four different qualities. And essentially these four qualities are nothing but love. But the fact is, Swami says that we should love all. But the kind of people that we meet are not all of the same type, isn't it? There are different people. Some people are good, some people are kind. But many others are not so good and not so kind, let's put it that way. But Swami says that you have to love all. So Swami tells us that the way we love different kinds of people is slightly different. It's a different quality. So in that context, Swami speaks about four qualities, but essentially keep in mind that these qualities are nothing but love. Let's start by naming the four qualities. They are Karuna, Mudita, Maitri, and Upeksha. Karuna, Mudita, Maitri and Upeksha. Well, don't get scared of the words. What they stand for is actually quite simple, and as I explain, you will know that most of them you are very familiar with. Let's start with the quality of Karuna. What does it mean? Karuna means compassion. See, as we go through life, we will constantly come across many people and beings who are probably at a state which is lower than us, or people who are in need, who are in pain, right? Can we have a spontaneous sense of compassion towards such people? That is what this quality of Karuna is. When you spontaneously feel compassion for somebody who is in some sort of a need. It's not just about doing seva. It's not just about you doing charity or going out and helping people, going out of your way to probably a slum or a hospital and helping people. Of course, that's very, very important. But when I talk about karuna as compassion, as a quality that we have to practice in everyday life, I'm talking of the attitude of compassion, which Swami would say is a sign of a pure person. That is, constantly looking out for anybody who might need any assistance. That nature of spontaneously going to help somebody, that nature of spontaneously doing what you can to better people's lives, that quality is called karuna. So is there a way that you can increase this? As I said, when we probably look at somebody who's in need, many thoughts come in our mind. One thought is probably this of compassion, but you might have other thoughts of, no, I don't wish to help that person, or, you know, that person probably has done something wrong and that's why he's in the position or she's in the position that they are in. Many such thoughts come. But if you want to dwell upon and entertain and impress in your heart the quality of compassion, you must act upon it. And that's why what we refer to as random acts of kindness is something which goes a long way in purifying our heart. So every time you have an opportunity, it could be very, very simple ones. Let's say you see an elderly person who is walking with shopping bags and you need to go and help them. Go do it. Because that will not only make you feel good, of course, but it also makes this quality of compassion a deeper part of your thinking. Any such small thing, you know, you might see an elderly person trying to cross the road, or you might see somebody who is poor and probably you have something which you can give it to them, you can share with them. All of this helps in making this quality of compassion become deep-rooted in your heart, thereby making it purer. Now let's come to the quality of mudita, which is again a very, very important quality. And in a sense, the quality of mudita is quite opposite to karuna, not because of the nature of the quality, but in what context you use it. Just like how I said karuna is when you come across people who are probably more unfortunate than you are and you have compassion for them, there are many people you will come across who are doing better than you in life. There might be classmates in your class who are more talented than you. There might be some of your friends who are getting better ranks than you. Or you might even know people who are probably more well off than you. Swami says that towards such people, you should have this quality of mudita. What does this quality mean? Swami says that you spontaneously feel happy for them. You spontaneously feel joy that they are doing well in life. Now think of it, not all of us feel that way, isn't it? Or at least not all the time. Very spontaneously sometimes we feel jealous, which is quite common. All of us have that problem. But Swami says, can you replace that feeling of jealousy with this quality of mudita, where you spontaneously feel happy for something good happening in another person's life? So if we have a pure heart, spontaneously we will feel this joy. And when we don't feel it, that's all right, because as I said, we can practice this. And how do we do that? Every time someone around you does well, immediately go and congratulate them wholeheartedly. Don't hold back. Even if that person has defeated you, give them a warm hand, give them a handshake, give them a hug. Whatever it is, express your appreciation of that person. Because there are two qualities, as I said. On one hand, you want to go and congratulate that person, you're happy for that person. But also there is this jealousy. So now you can choose which quality you want to give importance to and which quality you wish to act upon. So every time you come across somebody who probably has done something, you know, someone has in your school has sung a song and it's very beautiful, or someone has won a prize, don't hesitate to go and congratulate them wholeheartedly. Tell them that you're very, very happy for them. You wish well for them, right? And that is the quality which is very important. Sometimes even more important than karuna, because compassion is something which most of us have. But this quality of being happy when some others are happy is something we miss out, especially if, let's say, it's a competition and somebody else has won and you've lost. Isn't it more difficult? Can you wholeheartedly go and help that person. And this is the best way to counter jealousy. And you will find that when you start doing this, you will automatically become a very, very pure person from inside. This is one of the qualities which is very important in making you pure from within. The third quality that Swami speaks about is the quality of Maitri. Maitri means friendliness. Well, if Karuna is towards the people who are doing bad compared to you, Mudita is towards people who are probably more successful or more rich or more powerful than you. Maitri is a quality which you generally have towards everybody, because most of the people we come across are probably like us. Sometimes they are successful, sometimes they are unsuccessful. At the point you're talking to them, they might be sad, but they are not sad all the time. So we all interact with people who are pretty much like us. We are equals. And Swami says towards such people, which means towards most people we come across, we must have an attitude of friendliness. Most often, they are people just like us and you interact with them in an equal level, right? I remember when we were in hostel, Swami would tell us this thing. He would repeat it so many times that it's really stuck in our heads. Swami would say, eating alone is a sin. This is what Swami used to tell us. Eating alone is a sin. And so because of that, it became so much a part of us that whether be it in a hostel or be it in the university, we would never be able to eat something alone. Even if it's a bar of chocolate or if it's a packet of biscuits, we would always offer it to the person next to us. And being in the hostel, we would always keep getting these goodies from our homes. So it literally became a habit for us that we cannot have it by ourselves. We have to share it with the people around us. And this sharing is a very important aspect of Maitri, or friendliness, where you, without any hesitation, share what you have with others. Without any hesitation, you are ready to stretch a helping hand to your friend, to your classmate, or whatever it is. And you would know it yourself that this attitude of friendliness or this quality of friendliness could make you very, very popular in your school or your class, because everybody will be fond of you if you are able to be friendly with everybody, right? But this is a quality of purity of the heart. It does not come if you have jealousy or if you have selfishness in you. You cannot share if you become selfish, right? So when you develop this quality of friendliness, automatically your heart also starts getting purified, and all these bad qualities which we spoke of in the beginning start leaving one by one, right? So this is again something which you can practice. Constantly look out if there is a friend whom you could help. You know, somebody might be poor at a subject and you could just sit with him or her and try to help him out. Or very, very small things that somebody might need and you might, you know, you can have. Or things like a very, very important quality is not to have fun at the cost of others. Because, you know, when we move around in society, we always tend to do this. And somebody falls and we laugh at them. Somebody has any problem, we make fun of them. To give up this quality, don't make fun of your friends. Don't draw pleasure from others' discomfort. This is also a quality of friendliness. And to be able to accept people as they are. They might be of different cultural backgrounds. They might be of different economic backgrounds. Or different habits and feelings and thoughts. But you accept them as they are and you show friendliness to everybody. Right? And this is what Swami also taught us when he put us in the hostel, because we would be about 12 people in a room. We had to share the room. We had to share everything which was there. We had to share our cupboards and bathrooms and the dining hall. So automatically you start becoming concerned for the other person. You start sharing and caring, as we say, right? Because this is a quality when it is expressed in action, it slowly starts purifying the mind too. So every time you get an opportunity to express your friendship, to go out to a friend and, you know, as I said, congratulate them or give them a friendly hand, to share what you have, it will make you pure. There's a beautiful story which is actually a legend of the Olympics. I don't know which Olympics it is from. It's about two athletes. One of them is an American athlete and the other is a German athlete. One of them was Luzlong, I don't remember the other name now, where it was during the Berlin Olympics in the 1930s, where this American athlete had been to this German Olympics. And then there was this German athlete who was probably the apple of the eye of the organizers. They thought that he is going to be the winner, right? And there was this long jump event where they had to participate. So this American athlete was very, very tensed because he wanted to win the medal, but he was in the German games, the Berlin games, and here was the favorite who was a German jumper, and he was really good. He was doing his jumps really well. So this American athlete was very, very tensed, right? And he wanted to do his best, and because he was tensed, he was not able to even qualify. All his jumps were becoming faulty jumps. So he was becoming even more tensed, and he had only about the last jump before he could qualify for the actual final event. So when he was struggling like this, the legend goes that the German athlete, who was actually his competitor, came up to him and very warmly put a hand around his shoulder, and I've got the names right. The German athlete's name is Luzlong, and the American athlete's name was Owens, right? So this German athlete comes and puts an arm around the American athlete and tells him that, why are you so tensed? Why didn't you calm down? And then he gives him a suggestion of how he can make a better jump. Imagine, they are competitors and they are competing for nothing less than an Olympic gold. And here is this German athlete was coming in training his own competition how to qualify for the finals. And the story goes that Jesse Owens, who is the American athlete, clears that jump, participates in the finals, and eventually Jesse Owens wins the gold medal and Luzlong actually won the silver medal. And the first person to go to Jesse Owens and very heartily shake his hands, hug him and congratulate him was Luzlong, the German athlete. Needless to say, it's why is it remembered after so many decades? Because it was a sign of somebody who was expressing a very pure feeling of his heart. That friendliness, that ability to be happy at another's victory. That is what actually is a sign of a pure heart. So every opportunity that you have to probably help a friend, to congratulate a friend, to boost a friend, to inspire and enthuse a friend or the people around you, you must do it. And even more if there is a little bit of resentment in you, overlook that resentment. If there's a feeling of jealousy, you consciously tell yourself, no, I will not be jealous. I will not let this feeling come in my heart. And especially if somebody wins a competition and if you feel a little bit of jealousy against them, make it a point to walk right up to that person and very heartily congratulate that person. Let me tell you, it'll make you feel very, very good, and it'll become a habit in no time. Well, I spoke only about three qualities. There's a fourth quality, and the fourth one is very important. The fourth one is called upeksha. Well, those who need our help is fine. Those who are doing better than us is fine. And those who are equals are fine. What about those who are difficult people? Those people who tend to irritate us, those people whom we find very difficult to move around with. Well, I still recall your last question, Emma, which was about how do you avoid bad company if you should not be judgmental of others? And I think I spoke of this a little bit in that answer too. There are a lot of people whom we come across who might be a little like this. I mean, they might have 100 other problems in their life because of which they behave a little nasty. So what do you do in such situations? And when Swami says love all, you must love even that person. So Swami says you must develop this quality of upeksha, which means that you do not have hatred towards that person. You don't start cursing that person. Oh, you're so bad. May this happen to you. Let this happen to you, or let you suffer like this. Not that sort of a feeling. You don't allow yourself to start hating that person that way. But you probably keep away from that person. You just get detached from that situation. You don't hate. You don't even try to become friendly. Yes, if you can correct that person, if you feel that you are in a position to do that, then yes, you can do that. But most often, if that is not possible, it is not to have any kind of hard feelings towards that person, just staying aside and leaving that person alone. And more importantly, as Swami would say, you pray for that person. Because we never know, you know, we come across many, many difficult people in our life. We have no idea about them. They might be coming from a very troubled background, troubled childhood. So you don't know. When I spoke about Karuna, I told you that there are people who are poorer than you or more difficult in difficult times than you, and you have compassion towards them, right? Let's say that you come across a person who is disabled, who is probably visually impaired or is quadriplegic or something. You automatically feel compassion for them, don't you? Now imagine, Swami says that what stops us from doing wrong and what makes us do the right, makes us choose the right over the wrong, is what we call discrimination. And Swami would tell that those who constantly indulge in bad activities, they don't have this discrimination. Now imagine if you look at a person who is bad or who is behaving badly, and you think that this person does not have something which I have. I have discrimination, I have buddhi, but this person unfortunately does not have that discrimination. Wouldn't you look at that person as someone who probably has a kind of disability, just like how you would look at a person who does not have a limb or a sense which is working? This person does not have discrimination which is functioning well. So even in a situation like that, can we have compassion for that person even though that person is troubling us or irritating us? And when we feel like that, what do? We spontaneously pray for that person. We pray, Swami, please help this person, you know, help him out of this situation. May he become good. As we would pray in Hindi, Sanmati Do Bhagwan, we would say. The reason is you pray for that person with a pure heart, without hatred. So these are the four qualities which Swami speaks about when we work upon. I mean, this is the most practical thing which Swami is saying, because we see different kind of people in different kind of situations. So Swami is saying how our response to them should be. So to quickly recap those four qualities, what are they? Swami says, to those people who probably need your love, who need your help, who need your kindness, you approach them with compassion, with the quality of karuna. And this is not just about seva, but an attitude of being always helpful. You know, when you come to Prashanti Nilayam, you see all of these people who are doing seva here. We call them sevadal. Swami would constantly tell them one thing. Swami would say that I don't want you to do seva or do service only when you're wearing this scarf and badge. You are not a sevadal only when you wear the scarf and badge. Swami said, wherever you are, back in your hometowns or you're traveling or in Parthi, wherever you are, you should constantly look for opportunities by which you can make yourself useful for another person. That is the attitude you must develop. So that kind of compassion, that kind of karuna, that is the first quality. The second one, as I said, is called mudita. Being spontaneously happy for something which is happening good to the other person. You have nothing to gain, right? It is not being happy. A friend of yours wins a jackpot, you don't feel happy for him because he's going to give you a big treat. I don't mean in that way. You feel happy for somebody who probably is not, the good thing which has happened to that person is going to be of no value to you. But you just feel happy for that person. That's a very, very pure quality which we all must develop. And lucky for you, you're asking this question so early in your life. You have a long way and it's a long time you have to practice and develop this quality of mudita. The third one is the quality of friendliness. You don't have to become friendly with everybody in the sense of you don't go around getting attached to friends. It's not about having followers in Facebook or followers in Twitter or having so many friends in all these social media sites. It's not about that. It's about friendliness. You become friendly with everybody you come across with. Everybody looks at you as a good friend. Oh, I can talk to this person friendlily. This person will always have a kind word for me. He'll always have a pleasant word to share with me. That quality is called maitri, friendliness, where you're ready to share what you have. You're not selfish. You do not have resentment to mix with all kinds of people. You respect people as they are. That is the quality of friendliness. And the fourth one, as I said, is upeksha, or a feeling of detachment from people who probably could be evil or could be very troublesome, where you don't hate them, you don't start being very upset and you start cursing them. You know, some people tend to do that. But can you instead start praying for such people when you see somebody doing something wrong? Can you pray to Swami saying that, Swami, I don't know what has led this person to do such a crime. I pray to you so that, you know, this person's life becomes straightened so that he or she stops doing what they are doing of troubling other people and hurting other people. So these are the qualities which actually lead to a pure heart. I think that really answers your question, but let me extend that a little bit more. What happens when we have a pure heart? And let me also tell you that this is only one way that I can explain. I'm not saying that I have more ways to explain, but Swami has explained this in so many other ways. Almost every spiritual activity that you do, be it in doing bhajans or doing puja in your puja room, or let us say writing Swami's name 100,000 times, or going to your Balvikas classes, or going for seva, going for your, soup kitchen seva, or whatever it is that you all do. All of this, Swami says, will lead to chitta shuddhi, which means it will lead to purity of the heart. So when you engage in all of these activities, even if you follow these four qualities which I told you or not, it will eventually lead to these four qualities. So in that sense, these four qualities are also a measure of seeing for yourself, are you becoming pure from within or not, right? So when you go through all of these activities which I just mentioned, you can constantly see within yourself if you're developing these qualities of karuna, pudita, maitri and upeksha. If you're developing, then be sure that your heart is getting purified. Now what happens when the heart becomes purified? Swami would often talk about Lord Krishna, right? And Lord Krishna, we have this beautiful appellation for Lord Krishna, which we also sing in the bhajan. We call him Chitta Chora, right? Chitta Chora means one who steals the heart. That bhajan which we all sing, Chitta Chora Yashoda Kebal, which Swami himself used to sing, right? So Chitta Chora means the Lord who steals the heart. And what sort of a heart does he steal? Swami says, when your heart becomes very, very pure, that heart now starts attracting the Lord, that the Lord wishes to come and steal that heart. And this is exactly what Lord Krishna tells Arjuna. He tells him, what is the kind of heart I am attracted to, which I will be tempted to come and steal? There is a beautiful shloka in the Gita where he says, Adveshta sarva bhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirankara sama dukkha sukha kshami. And all that I spoke about today is actually in this one verse of the Bhagavad Gita in the 12th chapter. Adveshta means not being envious of others. Isn't that what we spoke about? Not having the quality of jealousy. Adveshta means not having jealousy or envy towards others. Sarva bhutanam, which means towards all beings, you should not have this quality of adveshta. And then Swami says you should have the quality of maitra, which is friendship. That's what I mentioned as one of the four qualities. And then karuna, the feeling of compassion. So he says, Adveshta sarva bhutana maitra karuna evacha. And then he says, Nirmamo nirhankaro, which means without having this feeling of mine, selfishness, right? That's what we always call nirmamo, means selfishness. And nirhankara, without the feeling of ego and arrogance. And if you want to be friendly with everybody, automatically this arrogance and ego will go away from you. If you want to share things which you have with others, you will share it. You will not be giving it to others, right? You'll consider yourself in the same level as others. So automatically you will become humble. And then he says, sama dukkha sukha. And when you start being happy for others' successes and happy for others' victories, can you ever be sad? Swami would tell very beautifully, you walk up to the notice board to see the results of your exam. And there is this boy who was going up to see the results. And apparently this boy had failed in that exam. But he looked at the list and he was giving a huge wide grin. So somebody walked up to him and he said, "Hey, you seem to have failed the exam. Why are you smiling?" And apparently this boy told them, "Yes, I did fail the exam indeed. But look at the number of people who have passed. I'm feeling happy for all of them." And Swami would tell this in the discourse and say, imagine if you have that attitude. Can you ever be unhappy? Can you ever be disappointed? And that's what Swami says here. Samad dukha sukha, which means be it success or failure, you will always be in the same level of happiness. And then the quality of kshami. Kshami means the quality of forbearance. You're ready to put up with other people. You're ready to forgive others. Because you cannot have the quality of upeksha and not having hatred towards people who irritate you or trouble you if you cannot forgive them, right? So forgiveness is again a very, very good quality. And Lord Krishna tells in that verse that if you have all of these qualities that is mentioned here, yomad bhakta same priya. He said that devotee who has a heart filled with these qualities, he says, is very, very dear to me. So if your heart is pure like that, Lord Krishna says, I will get so attracted to the heart that I will have to come and steal it. And that is what we all want, right? We want a pure heart so that it will attract the Lord and we will be attracted towards the Lord. So thank you, Emma, for that very beautiful question. I hope I gave you something to think about, because at the end of the day, you will have to start doing at least some of what I've said. And you will find that when your heart starts becoming purified, you will automatically feel more and more and more love towards everybody. And needless to say, more and more and more love towards Swami. If that is happening, be sure that your heart is getting purer and purer and purer. So thank you, Emma, for that beautiful question. If you have anything more to ask, you can always send me a mail at prem@radiosai.org. Dear listeners, concludes the answer which I wanted to give the question which Emma sent us. But it's a very beautiful coincidence that she asked this question about purity of heart on this day, 27th of July, because today is the anniversary of one such person who probably exemplifies that pure heart. Today is the death anniversary of our late president, Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. And the number of anecdotes about his life, about his simplicity, about his humility, about his concern for others really shows how he is a perfect example of this, this quality of having a pure heart. And I thought it's a perfect time to probably share some of the stories which many of you must have already read and heard on different forums. But why not recollect some of them on this day, which is actually a day when we remember this beautiful son of this land of Bharat. All that I spoke about today, about having concern for others, constantly looking at how you can add value to other people's lives, or looking at other people's conveniences, that is what really Abdul Kalam stood for. And the number of anecdotes, I found a few which I always loved hearing and sharing. One of the anecdotes which they always tell about is, when Abdul Kalam was working in DRDO, Defense Research Development Organization. We know that it's a defense facility. The campus was on high security alert. So they had this meeting of how to increase the security preparedness of this campus. So somebody came up with this idea that there's a huge wall around the entire campus. Why not we put broken glasses on the wall? That is something which we often see in many of these buildings, so that people will not be able to scale and jump over the wall. So when this suggestion was made, And Abdul Kalam immediately, said no to it. He said, Dr. Kalam said, no, we will not have glasses on the walls. So everybody was surprised. They said, why is he so much against it? And then Dr. Kalam himself explained, he said, if you put glass pieces on the wall, where will the birds sit? Won't the birds be hurt if they're trying to fly or scale over the wall? And that was something which none of the other people in the wall really thought of. Because here was somebody who was really concerned about the well-being of not just the colleagues who were sitting there, but even the birds and animals around. And talking about his concern for the colleagues who work with him, there's another very beautiful anecdote where one of the subordinates of Dr. Kalam once came to him and said that he wanted to go home early that day. He explained to Dr. Kalam that he had promised his children that he will take them out for a certain exhibition. So he told that to his boss, Kalam, and told him that, sir, please excuse me a little earlier today. And Dr. Kalam was more than happy. He said, yes, you have to go and spend time with your children. So certainly you can take off early. But this person, what happened is after he took the permission, he went back to his workplace to continue working till the time came. But he got so engrossed in his work, like, that's how scientists are, aren't they? So he got so engrossed in the work that he was doing that he lost track of the time. So finally he got up, he finished his work, and he realized that he was quite late, so he rushed home. When he went home, what did he see? That his children were not there. So he asked his wife, what happened? Where are the children? I had promised them to take them to the exhibition. So then the wife said, I thought you knew. Because at around 5 o'clock, when you were supposed to come, your boss came here and he took the children out to the exhibition. That was how sweet Dr. Kalam was. He saw this subordinate of his who was so drawn into his work. So he thought, all right, there's no point in, asking this man to stop his work. So he himself went to the house of this junior of his and he took the children out so that they don't get disappointed. And this was a quality which really took him places. From being a scientist in one of the many scientists in the country, he went on to head the scientific organizations, which are very, very famous in our country, eventually becoming the president of India. But even when he did become the president, he was constantly so simple and humble all the time. I still recall when he came as the guest for our convocation after he'd become the president. He was such a simple man. He was, the boys who had served him were telling that they went to serve him food late in the night and he would have his dinner very, very late because that's how hard he would work, constantly meeting people, speaking to them and looking into files and all of that. So late into the night when they served him, without any pretensions, without any airs about him, he sat on his bed, cross-legged, and he was eating food. After he finished his food, he looked at these students who were there, the hospitality group which was there, and with a very sweet smile, he asked them, can I please wash my plate? Can you imagine that? He was the president of India who was asking these students, after eating his food, can I wash my plate? And of course, the students there, they told him, sir, you could be the president of India, but there are a few things that you're not allowed to do, and this is one of them. But that was how simple a man he was. So much of humility, so much down to earth. And another very beautiful anecdote which they talk about, this was probably the last thing that he did. He was going to IIM in Shillong to give a lecture, and during that lecture is when he finally collapsed and he breathed his last. So when he was going to this particular place, it was a long journey by road, about 1.5 hours, and as per the protocol, he was being taken in a car, and in front of the car, there was this security jeep on which there was a young security officer who was coming, standing there, looking around. That was the brief which was given to him. That was what he was supposed to do. About half an hour into the journey, Dr. Kalam looked at this person standing in the jeep and he became very, very uncomfortable. He started telling the people in his car, why is that young man standing? How long is he going to stand like that? I think it's going to be a long journey. And people in the car tried telling Dr. Kalam, he said, don't worry, sir, I think that he's been instructed to stand like that. But he was so restless, he kept saying that, but why is he standing? It's going to be so troublesome for him. And he started telling the people in his car, can you wire to him, to that jeep and ask this young man to sit down? Or can you wave and ask him to sit down? But nothing could be done to catch that man's attention. And even otherwise, he did not realize that this is what was being said. So finally, they reached the destination 1.5 hours later, and Abdul Kalam sent word for this young man who was standing in the jeep all through the journey. And this man was a little surprised. He thought that he had done something wrong. So he was taken into the presence of Dr. Kalam, and Dr. Kalam very warmly walked up to him and gave him a handshake, and he said, "Thank you, buddy." That's what he said. He said, "Thank you, buddy." And he said, "I'm very, very sorry that because of me you had to come standing all the way. Was it very, very uncomfortable? Did you eat something? Did you drink something?" You know, that person was literally a nobody in that entourage. He was just another security person, probably doing his job. How many of us have been in situations like this? Of course, we are not anything close to being the president of the largest democracy of the world. But even then, how many times we come across situations in life, there are so many people who contribute to something which is happening around us. But not that we consciously overlook them, but very, very casually we don't recognize and acknowledge the contributions of so many people. But this is what it takes. This is a sign of a person who is really pure from within, who could constantly see, you know, whose life he can improve, whose life he can touch. There are many such anecdotes. Apparently, once when he was invited to be the guest at a convocation, he went into the hall and he found that there was a huge chair kept for him, and all the other dignitaries who were sharing the stage with him were given smaller chairs. And Dr. Kalam flatly refused to sit on the chair. He said, "I will not sit on this chair. You have to give me a chair which is equal to all others." And he finally offered that chair to the Vice Chancellor, who of course refused to sit on it when Kalam was not sitting on it. And they had to rush and get another chair which was equivalent to the others on the stage. You know, how many of us are like that? And this is what makes a person humble and simple. And more than that, as I said, it makes the heart so pure that automatically God will get attracted to you and God will pull you near Him. And that's precisely what happened with Dr. Abdul Kalam. That when he became the president, Swami sent our Professor Venkatraman to go and fetch him. And Swami said, "Tell him that I'm inviting him for the convocation." And he was such a simple person that Swami had to tell Professor Venkatraman, "Tell him not to come in his casual clothes. Tell him he has to come formally dressed because the occasion is grand. It's the convocation of our university." Because Swami knew that how simple a man he is, he might not, you know, even bother about wearing something expensive and coming for the occasion. But he did come, and so very naturally he was drawn towards Swami. And Professor Venkatraman was once narrating of this incident, which Swami himself narrated to him, of how after the convocation, the day he was leaving, Swami called Dr. Kalam for an interview. And he was sitting there on the floor, and there were other people in the interview room too. He very quietly got up, went close to Swami, and he was trying to stuff an envelope into Swami's hand. He gave that envelope in Swami's hand and he said, "Swami, you know, this is the salary I got as the President of India for the first 2 months in office." And very beautifully he told Swami, he said, "Swami, my mother and father are not alive. If they had been around, you know, according to the Indian tradition, I would have gone and offered the salary to them. But they are not around, so I wish to give it to Swami." You know, that is what happens when you purify your heart. You get drawn towards Swami, and Swami gets drawn towards you. And that's the reason why even now in the convocation, we have an Abdul Kalam gold medal, which Swami instituted from that 2 month salary, which Dr. Abdul Kalam gave Swami. And what a beautiful person he is, and he's the person we're remembering today. So it is not impossible to be like that. You know, there are innumerable number of examples. Probably he is one who rose to such a position that we are able to recognize his qualities. But even if we look around, there are so many such people with pure intentions and a pure heart. And there is nothing more we can offer to Swami. Because Swami says that everything that you have is given to you by me. If you want to give anything to me, purify your heart and offer it to me. And that is all that I will be happy to take. So with that, I'll probably end this session. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with me. If you have a question which you'd like me to answer on this show, and if it's on practical spirituality, do not hesitate to write to me. You can write to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's my personal mail ID. The mails that you send to that mail ID will be read by me alone. So if you wish to be anonymous, you can let me know. I will not mention your name. And if you can record your question in your own voice and send it to me, that will be more than perfect, because it's always wonderful to have different voices on the show rather than hearing me for 45 minutes to 1 hour. So if you have a question, record it and send it to me. I'll be more than happy to play it for you. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Suite. Last week I told you that it's 1 year of Radio Sai Answering Booth. So if we really have to keep a count of milestones, this happens to be the 50th episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. So I thank you all again for your support, for your questions, for your criticism, and for your love and support. I humbly offer this at Swami's Lotus Feet. And I'm going to, as always, leave you with a song, a beautiful song written by Swami's students for Swami, one of the sports meet songs, one of my favorites, and I'm sure you will enjoy it too. At 12:30, I'll again join you for the afternoon satsang, but I'll see you all next week at 11 a.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.
జీవితం ఇక దిద్దుమా. Vachanamritam Uripinche Premamritam
Venuvai Premato Rogani
Venuvai Premato Rogani
Challani Chupai Vasillani
Yana Jyoti Mara